This episode and the entire run of the Simpsons One-Shot series is completely listener-funded through Patreon. We've just revamped our Patreon page and are offering more than ever to listeners, including exclusive series just for Patreon supporters. So if you want to learn how to help support this series and everything we do at NewsAz, check out our rebooted campaign at patreon.com/newsaz. Welcome to the Simpsons One-Shot Show. This is the series where we take a look at each issue of the Bongo comic Simpsons One-Shot Wonderline, one comic at a time. I am Matt, and joining me, as usual, are my co-hosts Karen.
Hello.
And Derek.
Hello, everyone.
And today we are taking a look at The Wonderful World of Lisa Simpson, number one. First released in December 8th, 2013. This one has three stories: The Pyramids of Lisa, Honey Pooch Pooch, Lisa, and Lisa's Lending Library. Now, I want to start off, before I get to the cover, is the Lisa, when I saw there was a Lisa one, and I guess the title is actually The Wonderful World of Lisa Simpson, it was a little strange, because I had thought there was a Lisa Simpson's line of comics in Bongo, but I tried doing a quick search just now, and I'm not really getting a definitive answer. Do you know?
There is.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah, I have, I think, the first one.
Gotcha. Okay. So that is, I mean, it. Not saying they couldn't do it. I just thought that was a little odd to do it so soon, because this is just after the halfway point. Actually, right now it is the halfway point. At the time we started the series, it was just after the halfway point. I wouldn't think they'd be running out of characters, but now they've released two more to this series since we started this, one for Krusty and one for Mo. So this being the seventh issue is the halfway point, but it still seems a little early to pick from characters you already have a comic line from. But of course, these are stories that don't really necessarily have to do with, I don't want to even touch the subject of Simpsons canon, because that changes every episode, but I guess Simpsons proper stories, it's more along the lines of Treehouse of Horrors, where these are stories that they're not gonna be able to do episodes out of, but they're not Halloween based. So I guess if I look at it like that, They can do whatever character, and it's
the no big deal. The Lisa Simpson comic came out in 1995.
Okay,
so I don't know how many issues there were.
Right. Yeah,
but I mean, it was just called Lisa Comics.
Lisa Comics. Okay. Okay. I was pretty sure there was a Lisa comic, and there you go. That makes sense. So for the cover, I'm checking. I didn't say this in the Mr. Burns one, but there was no variant. There doesn't appear to be a variant for this one either. So this is just, not just. There's so much going on in this cover. This is Lisa on a hilltop riding a pink unicorn with Snowball 2, two squirrels surrounded by butterflies, and wind. A breeze of music sweeping through. Is that an accurate description? Because I don't know what else I can add to that and make any sense out of what I'm looking at.
No, that seems pretty accurate.
Okay.
I wish we had somebody more musically inclined that could see if that actually means yeah. anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It probably wouldn't surprise me if it is a specific song. Could even be the Simpsons theme song, but I don't read music well enough. That's
very true. Very well could be.
This is the girliest cover of girly covers I've in my. I would like to say it's the girliest cover I have in my comic collection, but one of my smart ass friends that sent me a couple of these also threw in a My Little Pony comic, because he thought it was weird. I was looking for Maggie and Lisa Simpson comics.
And now you have the whole collection.
Yeah, right.
You?
Yeah, I couldn't stop. I won't watch the show. I guess, what am I, a paper brony then, if I just collect the comics? Plain paper bone, brown paper bony, but okay.
Hey, now
you can't even talk. Yeah. No, the magazines you bring home in a paper bag better not be My Little Pony. I'll be severely disappointed when I open the bag. That's an old reference. I don't even know if you guys were young, old enough to get that.
Yeah. I get it.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, so that's the cover. The back cover, it is. I guess, you know, I'm going to say the back cover, because the artwork goes with the last story. So let me just, I'll just hold off on that. And it probably actually, now that I look at it, has to do with the last story. So we'll save the back cover for last. We'll just get into this story, The Pyramids of Lisa. The Pyramids of Lethe. Now, this starts off, this is probably the most Simpsons scene we've talked about in a while. This would actually be an opening to The Simpsons. You get Kent Brockman on the TV reading the news about a newfound pyramid. He does a pun. This is not the first Kent Brockman pun. He calls it a monumental discovery. Lisa's excited about this discovery. Bart chimes in. This just in, Lisa is a dork. And then Lisa just continues, gives a little bit of an insult about a bratty brother, but is still enthralled by the news. This entire scene is like lifted from many openings of The Simpsons. I really enjoyed that just opening for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
So now Lisa starts to imagine what it would be like to have been a pharaoh back in ancient Egypt, and you flip the page and wow, what an artwork change from not just this issue but anything we have seen before. This is, I don't know what
it was, it was a little disconcerting at first.
I don't even know,
some time to grow on me
what style it's supposed to be. Because, well, first off, Lisa, at first I said Lisa looks like an anime character, but I couldn't pinpoint what, but then I typed in anime character and it's so many. She doesn't look like one specific one after all. She just looks like a lot of them. A lot of them have hair. I thought there was one character that kind of had hair like this. There turned out to be like half dozen when I typed in just anime characters. But you have, you've got I'm calling this style ancient Egyptian for just the conversation, even though that's not it. We'll talk about it more when we're done. But the ancient Egyptian versions, you've got Otto, Ralph, Nelson. I thought Stan Lee until I realized that was supposed to be Flanders.
it's stupid, sexy Flanders.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Nelson, Ralph, Sherry and Terry, Jasper, which is one that like I didn't quite put my finger on at first. Gil, comic book guy, Martin, the squeaky voice teenager. Then panels below that, you have groundskeeper Willie, Selma and Patty, the doctor, Mo, Karen's favorite, Frank, Apu, and the crazy cat lady. And it's just, they are so, we've already, I think, kind of painted the picture. They are off model. These are so odd. And I don't know. We'll talk, maybe we'll talk more about the style. I can't imagine we're not going to, but let's get to the story. So, you have them doing, apart from really, I guess, Groundskeeper Willie. I don't know why. Oh, no, he wasn't. It was Mo that was born a snake handler and he'll die a snake handler. So I don't know why Groundskeeper Willie is selling asps or doing asp donation or adoptions. I'm sorry. But everyone else is doing character-like things. The doctor is working on Mo, who sewed his feet to his hands for some reason. Comic book guy is trying to sell an ancient scroll. Fink is doing some weather experiments. They're doing Simpsons character things, so you know who they are. So let's get to the story. I'm sorry. I just cannot stop looking at these images. So Pharaoh Lisa has gathered everyone together to create their own era on Earth. And now we see Lenny and Carl as these ancient Egyptians doing a very Lenny and Carl thing, where Lenny goes, he's not sure if Inhara is a peaceful field of reeds or they're still beating hearts getting eaten by ferocious beasts. So Carl's like, you still got your heart? He's like, you know I do. So they're happy. It's a good one. Next, we see a statue of Lisa being built, a statue being built in her honor. And it is a sphinx, but with her head instead of the, I don't know what Pharaoh's head is on the real sphinx, but it's Lisa's head on top of the sphinx. She has mentioned that she didn't want her people to suffer for the statue of her, so she's happy they found a volunteer, which is the Egyptian version of Bart, pointing out that he's not a volunteer. With this is good when you're getting into to slave and I don't want to say Nelson's not his master, but the one that is in charge of the slaves, he's the one who gives them the whipping across the back, and he says, I appreciate your service. Now get back to work, because that would be what Nelson would say if he was in ancient Egypt and in charge of the slaves. So Lisa starts kind of ramping up her speech. She's talking about how all of them have thrived under her leadership. And that leads into how the universe isn't what is controlling them. It's themselves that have the power. And kind of almost on that note, there's a barrage of lightning just striking all over the city. And the real gods, I guess you'd call them, the Egyptian gods begin to appear. And there's a great little clip of Patty and Selma saying, "Oh my Ra," which was, that's, I like that. That was funny. Very time, sets it in the time very well. That was a nice touch. The gods appear. I don't know. I know Ra. I know Anubis. I don't know any of these other gods. I'm not going to pretend to know who these gods are. So they have arrived.
I think that one on the left is Ayn Rand.
Yeah. Rand. And the crocodile is the crocodile from Tomb of the Ancients, Karen. That one we can agree on from Halloween Horror Nights. Always comes back to Halloween Horror Nights.
Yep.
So they've been dishonored. They're kind of here to say what's what. We get a kind of almost like the baseball scene in our last episode. We get a kind of a montage of the gods taking control. First is the snake about to devour Skinner, and I love the Skinner line because he says, "I told you the new math would be our downfall," because that was, Karen was too young. Derek, you might have just been in the tail end of that. New math was the big thing when I was in freaking elementary school. That's like every on the news, new math, old math, new math. And it's like, what is it's mm-hmm. math? Isn't math math? Who, what is this new math? So I liked the new math was still in the writer's minds when they wrote this. We get a plague of frogs, fire breaks out, and then we get a bunch of baboons stealing the city's fruit with the, now we finally get the Homer, if we hadn't had him before, the Homer Egyptian with his toga, or whatever you call it, his loincloth falling down over his butt saying, "Hey, these guys remind me of someone," which is, that's a nice drawing too. So after that little montage, it comes down to kind of I said it was a final confrontation. I guess it kind of is between Lisa and Ra. Lisa tries to apologize. Ra chastises her, saying, "Don't you know that pride goeth before a fall?" And Lisa points out, of course she gets this, but also points out this is a biblical proverb and that won't be written for centuries. And as she's explaining this, she realizes, Oh, I know it's about to happen. And this is a great shot of Ra's giant finger flicking her off the top of the statue. I don't, you know, I like Lisa. I don't want to say any harm come to her, but that's a hilarious image. Just play. And it says plink, plink as he pokes her off. And then poof, Marge is calling for dinner. It breaks Lisa out of her daydream. So she's, we're back in the Simpsons house. We're back in the Simpsons proper drawing. And Lisa says that she's glad this couldn't really happen. Glad that only these things are possible in our daydream. And besides, I'm not sure I could handle that kind of immortality is her final line. And that is actually scrolled across an image of the new pyramid that's found. And it is one of the spikes of her hair from the Lisa Sphinx, with just poking above the ground and the rest of the statue being underground. And along with that is a couple of dinosaur skeletons. The slave Bart, as he still presumably was working on the statue as it was buried underground. And then for no reason other than to just appease Simpsons fans, and I'm all for it, is a crashed UFO with a Kang or Kodos type alien skeleton inside the saucer. So, and that is the Pyramids of Giza. This was not boring, but it was also very interesting, because when you turn that page and got this drawings, it was like, whoa, that's an interesting, I mean, it's neat. It's neat. I wasn't expecting it. And like Karen said, it took a little getting used to. I like the story. I like the fight of the gods, but in the end, I'm saying, but it makes it sound like a criticism. It's not it's just an observation. I think they kind of painted themselves into a corner and didn't know how to get out of it. So they went back. They made it all a dream, which was fine as well. All in all, once I got used to this, I actually really enjoyed this. I liked that the drawing was so unique. And look, it must have taken a lot of work to draw these characters so off model, but yet you could recognize who they were. The background elements are good. They match the style. I like the gods fit in this particular world, and the action, which we don't get a whole lot of in Simpsons comics, I didn't really notice until this one, is really good too. The fire, the frogs, the battle between the gods. I actually opened this page, you know, scratched my head, and ended up really enjoying this story. Anyone?
Yeah, do you want to go first, Karen?
Okay. This is one of my favorite parts of the show, by the way.
I ended up enjoying the story, but I had to read through it twice before it really kind of sank in, all because the drawings were so off model and so different. It took some time to sink in, mm-hmm. and take everything in. Because, like, I'd be reading through the words and looking at the pictures the first time through. It just all wasn't it wasn't all melding together. But then when I read it through the second time, it was a lot more enjoyable.
Okay.
But the more I look at it, the more the pictures and the drawings grow on me. And I am actually kind of... as I slip through, I'm actually liking it a lot more than I originally did when I first read through it. So it's neat to see something so far out of the norm and out of the realm. It took me probably, when I looked at this first drawing in the ancient or the Egyptian style, I didn't realize it was Lisa. Because she looked so much like any other anime character.
Yeah.
Until I started getting that looking at the other characters, it was like, oh, that's Sherry Ventura, that's Otto. Like, oh, that has to be Lisa, because this is her daydream about her being the Pharaoh. So it took a little bit, but I liked it. Cool. Enjoyed it.
All right.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed this one too. Two things that stood out to me was all of the characters while she's daydreaming just made me feel that it would be possible to make a live action Simpsons movie.
Right. Because yeah.
So many of these characters are the characters that you would want to see in a live action movie, you know, and as much as they don't look like the standard Simpsons cartoon, you can easily tell that it's Lenny and Carl. You can easily tell that it's Milhouse, or, you know, yeah. You see Krusty at one point. Actually, the one that took me the longest until, you know, reading through it was Bart. You know, the first time I saw the first panel where you see Bart, I'm like, who's this kid? And then I read the next panel. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
There's a, that's a good one too. Cletus, I didn't get right away. That was my... Jasper, I said earlier, but the Cletus one too was like, what's this guy? Because it was,
yeah. I would love to know why Mo's feet were sewn onto his hands. But the other thing that I really liked about this is one of the long running Simpsons tropes that I always love when they do is whenever they do like a full pan of, say, like the inside of the Simpsons house where they're panning from one floor to the next. There's always something hidden between the floors, or when they're panning down to, you know, like Burns' secret lair where all the Republicans meet, there's always stuff buried in the ground and you're like, oh yeah, look at that. You know? So that last page of this, where they had the tiny little Bart and the dinosaurs and the spaceship. I love that trope in the show. So the fact that they added that here just made me laugh a little bit more.
Yeah. Now I looked up when you made me think to actually look this up. Nina Matsumoto did the pencils. Now I had to look up what that was. She's not a typical Bongo cartoonist. She actually does, and this makes perfect sense now, she does a Japanese manga called Yokaiden. So they actually did bring in a manga artist to do these pages, which makes perfect sense. why it looks like that. So that, okay, I was curious, and I don't know that she's ever done any other one, but she was, her style worked out well for this, so that was pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking through again and seeing if there's any characters I missed. I think the woman getting attacked by frogs is Reverend Lovejoy's wife. I didn't notice till now.
Okay.
Okay. I'm assuming the kid in Skinner's class has to be someone, but damned if I know who it is. I can't think of any dark haired kid. If he had glasses, it'd be Database, but he doesn't have glasses. We didn't mention Milhouse, which looks way too cool for Milhouse.
Yeah, right.
Every shot of Milhouse in this, he looks just entirely too cool. And yeah. And I like how Ralph's they're not togas because it's not grease, but his whatever loincloth is kind of wrapped to look like tidy whities, though they're not tidy whities because you could picture Ralph walking around Egypt in his tidy whities. And that's, I think all the other characters are, I can identify. I just, that one with that one kid is, I don't know. So, yep. All right. Well, that's it. Let's move on. Who's got, what's next? Who's got, what is next?
Honey Pooch Pooch. Honey Pooch.
Thank you, Honey Pooch Pooch. Yes, who's got that?
I do.
Yep, I kind of gathered. Even though Santa's Little Helper is slightly off model.
Yeah, but he's not fat.
Okay.
So it's okay. So Honey Pooch Pooch, which I'm thinking is a play off of Honey Boo Boo.
Yes, it's got to be.
Yeah. So.
And given the story, I'm sure. Because then I've not seen a full episode of Honey Boo Boo, but I know enough of it from pop culture that it's like, isn't it about her kid being one of those pageant kids?
Yes. Originally. Okay. She was originally from Toddlers and Tiaras.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. So then,
they originally found her and then she got her own show. Oh,
okay.
I went way too much about
you do.
This.
Yeah.
Is that going to be a new podcast coming to Neozaz soon?
Honey Boo Boo in character. Maybe.
I did want to do one called. So that's the thing where we just pick these random ass things that we didn't know about and learn about. And you kind of just did the pilot episode, Karen.
Oh, cause I could go more into it.
It's going to be that and the space shuttle episode of Punky Brewster. Cause I've always heard it's a thing and it really was a thing. I didn't know that. Anyway, sorry.
All right.
Honey Pooch Pooch.
Honey Pooch Pooch. So we see Lisa with Santa's Little Helper, and she's signing him up for a dog pageant. What are they called? They're not dog pageants. They're
just a dog show.
Or no, was this? Yeah, a dog show. Yeah.
Well, this is called the Precious Pooch Pageant, but.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
When she filled out the form where it said, don't write in this space, did she write okay?
Did she write? Oh, she may have. Anyways, Lisa's signing Santa's Little Helper up for this pooch pageant, indicating he's a greyhound. And she has an interesting fact that the greyhound was the only breed mentioned in the Bible. And you have Mo behind her. Saying, all right, let's move it on. These butts aren't going to smell themselves. So it makes me wonder if he's talking about his dog smelling butts or him smelling butts, but I don't know. But I love that they have Uter with his, I'm not even sure what dog that is, a bulldog of some sort,
which
maybe?
Is odd because he should have a German Shepherd.
Right. Because Bumblebee Man has a obviously shaking chihuahua.
Yeah.
that's a great little effect.
Yeah,
the little lines and the googly eyes.
Yep. So if everybody's entering their dogs, we have Milhouse with his dog's name just completely escaped
Puppy
me.
Puppy Goo Goo.
Oh, how could I forget that? And Lisa starts explaining that she's entering Santa's Little Helper because there's a new greyhound in the neighborhood and Santa's Little Helper is feeling a little bit insecure. And Milhouse points out that, oh, yeah, that's Maximus. And that the only reason they have Santa's Little Helper is because nobody else wanted him. And he's never... Yeah, so he's sitting there making Santa's Little Helper feel even worse. Then we get to the front stage where we have Sideshow Mel is basically doing the opener for the show with his poodle, who also has a bone in its hair.
Yeah, that is. I love that little shot. Lack of a better word.
Yeah. Barney with his St. Bernard with the bourbon barrel, which I love.
Oh, I didn't even think you're right. Duh.
Yep. The sea captain has his dog with his little, also has a sea captain hat on.
Yep.
And Frank and his, not, still not sure what that is, but he's got the same hairstyle.
Yeah.
And the bug teeth.
Flanders and his dog with a mustache.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the dogs, that they made them look like their owners. So then we see backstage with all the other dogs, and Lisa points out how some of these dog owners are the worst stage moms ever. And we have, oh God, what? I feel like Matt. I don't know anybody's name today.
Who are you looking at?
The first one.
Lindsay Nagel?
Lindsay Nagel. Oh, my God.
I wouldn't have known that, so you got me on that one.
Anyways, so Lindsay Nagel is teaching her poodle how to be, to use her inner CEO to win and climb that ladder. Cletus and his hound dog, who he points out that he may get more points if he doesn't drool on the judge this time. and Brandine says if he wins, you get some hoof stew for everybody. And then we finally meet Maximus, whose owner happens to be Raymier Wolfcastle.
Which, again, should have a German Shepherd.
Yeah, but instead he's got a greyhound that can do circus tricks.
Yes.
And Lisa confronts him, saying maybe you're being a little hard on him. And Raymier's like, no, not so much, and indicates that one of my favorite lines from one of the best Rocky movies, we will break you.
Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Rocky IV is the best movie ever made. It's got a Russian and he beats his face in. That's the entire argument for Rocky IV.
Well, not a bad argument.
No, not at all.
No, definitely not.
So you get the show started with Krusty, who's there, and the sponsor of the dog show is the Krusty Rations, the dog food that makes its own gravy, which it probably tastes good to dogs and old people. And they start with the talent competition, and we have Comic Book Guy, whose dog retrieves comics, but he retrieves the wrong one, but has points out that this time he didn't piddle on it like he did in New Hampshire. Database's dog, he has taught Newton to retrieve any necessary items using a search engine, but unfortunately, he has used his PayPet account to buy thousands of chew toys instead.
Two things I love about that shot is that they couldn't give a dog glasses, so they put dark markings around its eyes. Uh-huh. And the Apple symbol what's the word I'm looking for? It's taken right out of the show. They've used that in the show.
Oh, yes. Yep. Yeah. So Krusty thinks this is worse than last year. For Pete's sake, we have an editor's educational note that Pete, it's actually Petey, is the dog from the Little Rascals.
Mm-hmm.
And the Little Rascals was a show which was with kids 100 years ago, and that's the feeling old editor's note.
You got to like the editor's note in the editor's note.
Yeah, right.
Yes. So now we have Maximus going through his talents, which is riding a unicycle, balancing books on his head, jumping through a ring of fire, and playing chess against Mo.
Now, is playing chess against Mo a talent?
I was just thinking the same thing. Like, that doesn't seem like it would be that difficult.
I can't imagine Moe's that talented of a chess player.
Right. So Krusty's so in love with this, he wants to give the award to Maximus, but Lisa points out there's one more entrance, so she brings out Santa's little helper and tries to get him to do his trick, which happens to be bouncing a ball off his head instead of catching. And so she makes her little speech that her dog may not be the fastest or the smartest. But if they're judging on, if it's a beauty and talent competition, and Bo points out that the dog is no Clark Gable either, which that I feel bad for Santa's Little Helper. He's pretty cute.
Even when he's drawn fat.
Yeah, well, yeah,
I guess.
Anyway, so Lisa points out that the definition of beauty is not necessarily what's on the outside, but it can be that, that this dog makes a little girl, when she's feeling at her worst, makes her laugh anyways, and that is also a great talent. So this gets to Krusty, and he says there's no other reason that, so he has to, she gets to Krusty, and he's all heartfelt, and he points out that, okay, I have no exception but to give this award to, and he points over to a dog that looks exactly like him, yeah. And a little buffo of charisma.
That's not later, creepy.
No.
Yeah, no, not at all. So later you see Lisa at home with Santa's Little Helper, who's still feeling kind of down, and they come around to the backyard, and Lisa has set up a party for Santa's Little Helper as the world's best dog, and he'll always be their champion, and that he's, the best pet. And you see Snowball, too, standing there in the corner, just kind of like, whatever.
Yeah,
and the cat is Santa's cute. Little Helper is all happy again. And we have Mel pointing out that we have girl that has taught us to look into our hearts and remember the true meaning of champion. And could now get that little dog off his boat.
Yeah.
I thought this one was cute. And I liked how they brought in so many different characters with their dogs and made their dogs so much like them. It's like exactly what you would think. If you went in the database's house, he would, he would have a dog that looks just like him. Comic book guy would have a lazy, big bulldog that doesn't move real quick, kind of like him. And I just noticed Groundkeeper Willie's dog wears a same outfit as he does.
It has a set of bagpipes.
Yeah, it does. His talent is bagpipes. That's awesome.
Yeah, this was fun. Kind of like the first one. It was fun to go through and look at the way they match them up. Like you just said, the dog part was fun. I could absolutely relate to the story because this is exactly what Krusty would do for our dog if she entered a contest and didn't win. She'd come home and set up a world's best dog party for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt she would do that. And the cats would have the same look on their face as Snowball too. This is fun too. This is cute. It's like the competition actually was probably the weak part of it. Maybe I guess it's okay. The fun part was the all the different dogs and whatnot. Yeah. You needed the story, so the competition part it flowed well. It was fine, and it actually gave an opportunity for more of those dogs, which is the part that I liked on this as well. So yeah, I like this one too.
Yeah, I thought this one was really funny. As a dog owner like you, Matt, I never like it when they make Santa's Little Helper sad, and it always seems like every story he's sad, and it's just so pathetic, the faces that he makes. But I thought it was real sweet that Lisa threw him the party at the end, and I got to tell you, one of my favorite things in this whole story is Flanders' dog's mustache. It just, every time, it makes me laugh. But no, I thought it was really clever how, they didn't just make like Barney's dog look like Barney. They made it a St. Bernard because he carries booze.
Yeah,
what I mean? Like, right. Like they were smart about it in certain cases.
Yeah. Yep.
But it was a fun little story.
In the midst of all this is this issue's prize, I guess you could call it. It's a sticker set, and it's got a almost bumper size sticker of The Wonderful World of Lisa Simpson, which I'm going to go put on my car after we're done recording. And then it has a Clobber Girl sticker, which I love because that's, I think, like the very first episode of our Halloween set of specials featured Clobber Girl.
Yeah.
So that that was cool. It also has a Team Corey. So it has Corey, what the actor, the Luke Perry guy, from it has Equalia. Equalia. That's the isn't that the that's Lisa's princess character, isn't it? Princess Equalia.
Yep, and yep. The double horned unicorn.
The double horned unicorn puking. Puking a rainbow into a giraffe's mouth, basically, is what it comes down to. Or a giraffe alien, because it's got, like, the Kangen-Kodos
legs.
Yeah. Then it's got little additional stickers, a little bird, a little frog, a little squirrel, and a little porcupine. I might have to give these to you, Karen, when you come in October. You'll appreciate these more than I do.
Yeah.
I'm keeping the bumper sticker, though.
He's keeping the Team Corey sticker, though.
Yeah, right. I'm taking that to the tattoo parlor. So here you go.
There you go.
I want this. All right. Well, that leads to the third and final story. And that leaves us with Derek's part of the show.
That's right. So the third story is Lisa's Lending Library. And this one is the artist is Cassandra Heller. Mm-hmm. Who does a bunch of different like comic book arts and TV show arts from what I could see, but it's very pastel and it's very like watercolors.
Yes.
So pretty much completely different than anything else that we've seen so far. This one starts out with Lisa deciding to open up a borrowing library on her front lawn. So she takes basically like a mailbox, but fills it with books. And says, if you come, you borrow a book, you bring it back and share. And it's got a little sign that says, a borrow and a lender be. So all of the townsfolk decide that they need to borrow one of Lisa's books. And Ralph thinks it's just a house for little people. he starts talking to the books. Hello, Mr. Book. Homer comes up right away and says that he would like to borrow a few books. And Lisa's stunned, saying that she's finally helping teach the unread masses. Homer takes the books out to the backyard, hops in his hammock, and realizes now he has a place to rest his beer. He refers to himself as Homer Simpson in the Goblet of the Reachable Beers. Milhouse decides that he needs to borrow two books that are a little bit denser, so she gives him Old Yeller and Huck Finn. Which he then ties to his feet, saying that Old Yeller will make him a taller feller. And Lisa's getting more pissed off because nobody's actually reading the books. They're just using them for their own gain. She sees Bart, and Bart wants a book on history. So she lends him a book. She should know better, but she still lends him a book. And he uses it to prop up his ramp for his skateboard. And he said he wasn't really interested about learning history. He was more interested about making history as he jumps off with a giant whoosh. Lisa's getting frustrated and realizes that maybe nobody's actually going to read any of her books. And she's right. She turns around and half of the town is in her front lawn. You got Jimbo balancing books on his head as if he's in some sort of an etiquette school. You have Crazy Cat Lady with some of her cats using the books as like little tents for her cats to live under. You have Mole Man holding a book up while Dread Eric Tatum punches him in the chest.
Yeah, which is what?
It's so random.
Yeah, that's just very weird. Santa's little helper is fat, Karen, and destroying a book. So maybe he ate a couple of the books first. And Burns has turned one of the books into a croquet mallet and is hitting a croquet ball through another one of the books. I'm not sure why, if he already had the arm of the mallet, why he didn't actually just have the mallet itself, but I'm not judging. Lisa loses her mind and starts screaming and saying, what's wrong with all you people? Gets frustrated and goes inside. Says to her mom that, you know, nobody's using my books like I intended. They should be reading and they're using them for other needs. To which she sees Marge using one of the books to hold up the kitchen table. So she gets frustrated beyond belief and decides she's taking down the book library. She's not going to have it anymore. She starts pulling the books out, and Ralph wants to know where all the little people in the house are going to live. And Lisa tells him once again, they're not people, they're books. And he said, yeah, the little people in the tiny houses, and they borrow sugar and tissues and things when people aren't looking. Well, Lisa recognizes that as the story of the borrowers. And thinks, oh my God, Ralph read a book. Once again, Lisa should know better.
Yeah.
So she's all excited and thinks Ralph read a book, gives him a big, big hug and said, you've restored my faith. And so maybe people will read the book. So she puts everything back in. He says, as she goes in for the night, he says goodbye, and you hear a little voice or see a little voice say, is she gone? And he says, I guess so. And all of a sudden, you see all of these little creatures coming out of the book library, and they're like, thanks, kids, you've saved our life. The coast is clear. And then they do three cheers for Ralph. Hooray. To which Ralph says, yay, books are fun. And that's the end.
Only thing that was missing was a leprechaun telling them to burn everything down.
They're close. They're about the same size.
Yeah.
They look a little Dutch, a little less Irish, a little more Dutch. But this was kind of a silly little story, you know. I mean, just something to fill up a couple of pages. The artwork is incredible.
Yes,
I mean, you know, the box alone, where Ralph's looking in and seeing the first time you see the little person, the way they drew Ralph is just outstanding. You know, and I don't know. I don't understand why Burns would need to use the book as a croquet mallet, or Tatum would be punching Mole Man, but. You know, I mean, it was definitely funny. It's a funny visual, but I think the thing that sells this story the most is the artwork.
It is. Cassandra Heller at least last time I was at Disney Springs. I don't know how often they've changed it out. She's got a big presence at Disney right now in there. This one particular art boutique. There's this kind of like home center-ish without it has like it's kind of like a Bed Bath & Beyond, but with Disney, everything Disney. And in their home decor section, the last time I was there was kind of, she wasn't directly featured, but a lot of her work was there. She had done these very big, the closest thing I can think of is this, the panel of all the characters, Jimbo, Crazy Cat Lady, Mole Man, and all that. But it's like, it's a montage of like each land, like Adventureland, and then one for Tomorrowland. But it's like every single element of it jam-packed into this, you know, 16 by 20 print. Really fun to look at, and it's this kind of like soft edged, like pastel meets watercolor look. I think she has a couple rides too, like Haunted Mansion and Small World. So her work is like, I've seen a lot of it all in one place, and as soon as I turned this, I go, I wonder if this is her, and I looked it up, and like sure enough, a couple of the prints I saw there were her. And she's done a lot of other work too. She's big in the convention circuit on the West Coast, so this is, yeah, you're right. The story, it's fun. It's not too contrived. I didn't really see the ending coming with, I should have though, with Ralph and him seeing things.
Yeah, but it doesn't make much sense.
No, it doesn't, but it's you know, it's. I was afraid it was going to be, Ralph did learn something in the end. No, it's just Ralph being crazy. So that's the ending it should have been. So, but the artwork is what is drew me to this one. So I agree with you on that. And the story wasn't too bad to go along with it.
Yeah, I pretty much feel the same way. It's definitely the artwork that carries it. There's not much more I can add to it. Okay. You've all pretty much said it, except for maybe the fact that I was a little bothered by Marge not being... She's usually always somewhat supportive of Lisa, at least to her face. I know there's times where she hates Jazz, but doesn't tell Lisa that. But, having her take the book and put it under the table, like, oh no, this is all right. I don't know what you're talking about. It just seemed a little off to me. But I mean, other than that, it's a cute story. And I always like when Ralph is being Ralph.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So that is just leaves the last few pages. We have, I guess it's not letters. It's kind of it says the bongo beat, like the tiger beat, I guess. It's like a newsletter. And the only notable thing for me, well, there's two now that I see it, but the first notable is the, even though it's not Simpsons related, it was the family cosplaying as Futurama. They have, it looks like the father and mother are Fry and Leela, and their kids are Bender, Nibbler, and the guy that robot.
Roberto.
Is that his name? That cuts everybody. Yeah. and then I didn't notice if they had this, I guess it wasn't in the last issue, because I didn't notice it, but it had one of those bongo stamps, and this one is, it's the Simpsons Smile Time Variety Hours Lisa Simpson, which is, of course, replaced Lisa for that special, much like the Brady Bunch did.
The last one had one too. It was the little Smilin' Joe Fission.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the DNA from Jurassic Park.
Is he like, okay, so it's not the little, it is a little, I looked at it now, it's the guy's like the little atom diagram as his body. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. The last page inside has another comic. I didn't read this because I didn't really realize this was here. Did you read this, Derek? This Homer comic?
Yeah, I skimmed over it real quick. Mm-hmm. It's just about a guy that is working too hard and decides that being lazy is the way to go. He works too hard and has to cancel his date with somebody who doesn't really seem to care that he has to cancel it. So then he decides to just be lazy, and she falls all over him for being lazy. And then there's a underwear wearing donut eating Homer, and it says Homer Simpson, actual picture of the man who holds the title of the laziest man in Springfield.
Yeah. So it's like the anti Joe Atlas ad.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, and then the back cover, it's Lisa reading Call of the Wild to a mama bear and her three cubs. And it's more the style of what we just read, but I don't know if that signature is, it doesn't look like it says Cassandra Heller.
It's Becky Drystand.
Oh, yeah. I see in the front now. Back cover by Becky. So it's not, okay, but she actually took some, looks like she took some design cues from the last comic, or the last story, sort of. No, now they compare them apples to apples, not so much. So, cute little cover there. So, I guess we're into the reviews. This one, definitely more than the last one. I could not stop looking at the first two stories because of almost the Easter egg-like quality of the character and the picture and the dogs. Stories were okay. Even the last story didn't have as many Easter eggs, but it was fun to look at, and the story was okay. I'm going to say, I'm going to say it's definitely higher than the last one, but not as high as some of the others. So I'm going to go 3.5, and I think I'm probably being a little too hard on it.
I'm going to go with a 4. I enjoyed all three of these stories. The first two, like you had said, Matt, it just had so many little hidden things in them. The way that they designed the characters in the first one to be more realistic, the way that they had the dogs in the second one to match the owners, I really enjoyed. And the third story was just kind of a little weird, but it was really amazing artwork. So, I mean, it definitely made up for the fact that the story was a little off.
Mm-hmm.
And we got stickers.
That's true, too. I forgot about the stickers. That is important.
I'm going to go with a 3.5, same as Matt. The Honey Pooch Pooch was certainly my favorite story. I like seeing all the different pets and dogs with their owners. The other two, the stories were okay, but I did enjoy the vast difference of artwork from some of the other comics that we've had. So it was a nice switch from what we've been looking at and what we've been seeing to have different artists come in. That's about it.
Okay, well, doing again oddball math, that's about a somewhere between 3.6 and 3.7, so not bad, not the worst, not the best, And well, that was it. I still enjoyed it. I enjoyed this conversation a lot more than the last one. We didn't seem to be going through the motions in any of these stories because there was something to talk about with each one, just something a little different each time. So, all right. Well, that will wrap up this episode. We'll be back again with Duff Man, which is one of the two original issues that even wanted gave me any desire to do this. So I'm looking forward to talking about that for sure. So until then.
Oh, yeah.
Until then, I got a feeling there's going to be quite a bit of theme park talk in that episode. So until then, check out the past episodes if this is your first one at neozaz.com, along with all the other work we do there as well. Our social media pages, if you want to follow what happens between episodes, are Neozaz Podcast on Facebook and Neozaz on Twitter and Instagram. So with that, I will thank Karen and Derek again for joining me this week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.